Hey everybody, this is a really interesting episode with so on today's episode we have Fred and AJ from the Blitz 97.5 ESPN's sports radio show here in Houston, and it was a bit last minute and a bit unexpected and definitely a bit potentially controversial. We'll see how my wife feels about this episode. But Fred is an American author, gambler, and sports radio talk show host in Houston, here in Houston. He's also the editor of Sports Map, and AJ's his co-host. So AJ is a sports talk radio host on The Blitz with Fred. He's a U.S. Army veteran, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu purple belt, and an unbeaten cage fighter who's now retired on 97.5's ESPN The Blitz. It's a sports show here in Houston. They're the longest-running duo in Houston sports history. We basically cover the gamut of discussion and kind of get a bit off topic, so bear with us. Today's episode is sponsored by Balcones and Old Forester and Jack Daniels. We talk about a couple of local picks. Jack Daniels released a brand new barrel proof to Texas, that the first ever attempt at doing this, and the very first pick from a local phenomenal bourbon bar, Poison Girl, just hit last week. So we talk a little bit about that. And of course, my favorite release of 2016, Old Forester 1920. We have a couple of special guests coming up over the next few weeks. Karen Igolka, if I pronounced that correctly, from Compass Box. She'll be here soon talking about the phenomenal product that is Compass Box. They buck all trends of typical blended whiskey and have produced some of the most well sought after whiskeys over the past couple of years. We also have George Lindsay from 100.3 FN The Bull and the whiskey professor himself, Bernie Lubbers from Heaven Hill, coming up in a couple of weeks. The Houston Whiskey Social, I've talked about it exhaustedly over the last couple of, since the beginning, last seven episodes. That's coming up July 28th. Get your tickets at Eventbrite. We are now about halfway to selling out. And for those who don't know, typically what happens is at the very middle, the few months before an event, you have a lull in sales. So typically you get all your sales at the end, the last month or so before an event. We are already halfway sold out, which means we are tracking to sell out for the Houston Whiskey Social potentially by the end of May. So middle of June maybe at the most. But if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, I highly encourage you to go to houstonwhiskeysocial.com. 350 whiskeys, food from it's going to be a phenomenal event. We're going to have Pappy Van Winkle there, your Buffalo Trace Antique Collection, just the widest selection of whiskeys available in the state of Texas, more than any bar here. It's just an incredible selection. So HoustonWhiskeySocial.com, and I think that's it. Without further ado, guys, Fred Fowler and AJ Hoffman from The Blitz. Cheers. Thanks for coming on, man. I'm excited to have you guys. You guys are a little bit of local legends. Fred Fowler and AJ Hoffman. Fowler, right? That's how you pronounce it? Yeah.
Four. Fred Four.
Four. Well, it depends on how many drinks you have.
Right.
I hope you can pronounce it. Four. Legends.
Four.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of those things. Fred and AJ. You don't. You know what I mean? You don't say the full names. You know who they are, but I don't. You know, I don't say your full name. But this is actually, so I figured we'd start with beer. You guys, I know that you're a big craft beer guy.
I am a big craft beer guy.
I'm serving him out of, we just had Ingenious on, so that was exciting. But, and you know Justin's sister, Christy, right?
Yeah.
So this is Hella Hyphy. This was done with Nobi, their general manager in Saloon Door. They did kind of a little collaboration. Nice little mini IPA. I know you're not on beer right now, Fred, but I brought plenty of whiskey to go with it.
You can smell it. Yeah, I can have a little bit. It's just my doctors told me I can't have beer for 3 months, so I'm just have a little sip.
It's been 3 months.
I haven't done what my doctor told me, so I have to go back to 3 months every time.
Start over.
Start over each time. Deal. What's the so? Is it just the carbs? The because I actually switched from beer because of the weight I was putting on like crazy. So whiskey just seemed like an easier, quicker solution.
He basically told me I can have whiskey, vodka, things like that, as long as it's in moderation, which good luck with that, but
yeah,
stay off the beer. Because I am trying to lose weight on top of everything else.
Yeah, I go in for physical every year and cholesterol, just everything, so I just switched over to beer. Or whiskey.
I have a record high cholesterol. I'm very proud of that.
You're an overachiever.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you are an overachiever. I actually, you're a big poker guy. I heard you made it to the World Series on $9.
Yeah, back in the Poker Stars days, which I really miss that. But basically, I entered a tournament for $9, won that. That got me an entry into a $600 tournament, which I won that. And that got me into the big tournament for the $12,000 package where the top 20 got in. And I was massive chip leader with 21 people left and basically just turned off the computer. Because at that point, I wasn't going to do anything but lose chips.
And but write it out.
Yeah, because all I needed to do then was finish in the top 20. So, yeah, I got in for $9 and had a really great experience. That was the first time I did it. The second time, I won a satellite, a $500 satellite to get in. So.
Wow. I've actually got a question about that. My brother-in-law, Sean, shout out to Sean. He's a huge fan of you guys. He's also an avid gambler like myself. And I've got this theory that I've come up with. Like you just said, you basically stopped playing to ride what you had, kind of prevent any kind of surprises, some bad beats or anything like that. And I came up with this thing where every once in a while I get tempted into chasing. So I've, you know that thing where everyone checks and you get to see a free card? I will fold if I'm afraid. Like, for instance, if I've just got like this some non-suited connectors or something that's not really that great and I don't want to risk having to be – I don't want to risk being tempted to chase, I'll fold it, even if it's a check all the way around just to get – just to, like if you're an alcoholic, you avoid alcohol. So I'm avoiding the temptation, and I've been verbally abused by my brother-in-law saying that's a stupid idea, it's a free card. And I'm curious if you think it's a smart call to fold and to avoid that temptation, or if you think it's absolutely idiotic to waste a free card.
It's absolutely idiotic to waste a free card. You should never do that, because the reality is when you get out of the hand, I mean, if you don't trust yourself as a player, you do that. I mean, because once that card comes, you may be beaten, and that's where you have to read the other players and know the other players. And one thing, and AJ's really good at this too, the first thing you need to do at a table is spend a few minutes watching the other players.
Learning because you will learn
who can play, who's aggressive, and who's an idiot, and who's a drunken tourist in the first 5 minutes. And once you do that, then you start narrowing down what your hands are going to be and who you're going to play against. And I will sit there, especially in a cash game. Like we were over at Golden Nugget, and I was sitting there with Jerome Solomon and a couple other friends of mine at the table who are really good players. We never touched each other. It wasn't a matter of trying to avoid each other. It's just I know those guys can play, and if we're past the flop, then I better have something really good. But there were four other guys at that table that were terrible. So we just kind of took turns cleaning them up, and that's what you have to do. You have to figure out the table first and
– play to your audience.
Yeah, and every table's different. I mean, if you're at a hyper-aggressive table – then I will tighten up and wait for hands. If I'm at a table with a bunch of old people who play hyper tight, then I'm very aggressive. It just all depends on the players. But in a situation like that, always see the card, because it if you catch something, you pick up a little pot there. And if you don't, and you realize, okay, I'm beat, even though I might have top pair, just get out of the hand.
Yeah, if you're holding 7-8 and the board's 2-4 king, I mean, you know that. Chances are good this isn't a hand you're going to like bet your tournament on.
Right.
But
so
if the next card's a 7, suddenly you're alive. If the card after that's a 7, suddenly you've got a hand that could potentially win the pot. So I'm with Fred. I think it's silly to pass up the opportunity. I mean, even if you do see those two sevens come, it doesn't necessarily mean that you've got to, you know, ride or die with that hand. You still have to be sensible, because there's a lot of things still that could beat you. But When you play with hands like 7-8 or something like that, there's only a certain amount of hands that you can even hope to get. Like, you can hope to pull a straight, or you can hope that you have three of a kind.
I think that's the biggest one, though, is with a straight or with a flush draw, you're so tempted to ride it out that I like to get out. If I can have the wherewithal to not be tempted, I'd rather just run away now.
The problem is you're looking at any time you've got suited connectors, you're looking at it as a straight's the only hand you can make, or a flush is the only hand you can make, where, you know, a three of a kind is not, it's not a bad hand,
right?
You know, at least to look at.
Well, I'm an idiot then. Sean, you win this one.
Sean wins.
Yeah.
So let me grab those whiskey glasses here. So you guys actually have a bit of a whiskey passion yourself too, right? I mean, you guys enjoy a good pour.
I do like whiskey, yeah. I'm not opposed.
So we will actually start.
I'm no prude.
I know I came on the show about a year ago this time, right before the social, and we had a few drinks. I actually brought something a little special today. So I know you guys both know Travis Whitmire pretty well.
Yes.
Travis Whitmire is the local distillery here that is very well beloved. Whitmire's Distillery. Him and his brother own it, for those who don't know. And they're not very well known outside of Texas. But those in Texas who know about Whitmire's, unobjectively, I would argue, is probably the best Texas distillery currently. Or at least one of my favorites, as far as the closest thing to that Kentucky bourbon profile. I'll give you that there.
Thanks, sir.
This was a single barrel pick, so I've been trying to convince him for over a year to give me a barrel. And he kept saying, I can't. It's a little bit more logistically difficult than that. And finally, we found a way to link up with Specs, make them happy, make us happy. And we did their first ever actual grain-to-glass straight bourbon. So I don't know if you know, but the single barrel cask strength that they release now that you find on the shelf is not really theirs. It's sourced, which is not a problem. If you're going to source whiskey, the fact that it's cask strength, the fact that it's single barrel, he's hitting all the right notes. This is their first ever grain-to-glass product that was actually sold at retail, and this is just the last few drops of it, and it's one of my favorites. It was a very well-beloved bottle, and I'm a big fan.
That was good.
Yeah.
Travis is one of my favorite people here in Houston, and he's a bit of a character, too.
What?
He's been on the show, right?
Oh, yeah. Chris and Travis are two of our we've been friends with those guys forever. They've done business with us. I love those guys. Matter of fact, we're going to be partnering up on a video show that we're going to be doing, a drunk sports show, and Whitmire's is going to be the main sponsor. In fact, we're going to be the first one out there at Whitmire's. But, yeah. I've known,
where are you going to shoot it at?
Well, we're doing the pilot at the distillery. And after that, it just kind of depends on what other sponsors we get, because we've got a ton of interest from other people. So the idea was to do it once a month and have Whitmire sponsor that one. But it looks like it might turn into a once a week thing with a different sponsor every week and going to a different bar every week. But it's going to be fun. We're going to have famous guests and get them drunk and interview them and see what happens.
That was kind of the concept with this. I think Anthony Bourdain has made his fame by traveling around and having dinner with famous people all over and new foods and new time and new venues. I like the idea of sitting down interview style, just having good conversation with famous people or just interesting folks. Last week we had on this, and I'll say it again, the chief deputy scientist of the human research program at NASA, this really important individual that's responsible for trying to figure out a way to get humans to Mars and survive 30 months in space. And he's a big whiskey guy. So we just sat here having drinks.
It feels good. It feels good to know.
It felt so good, man. It just having, you know, talking everything from fake news and the way people like to, you know, there's a flat earth movement right now happening.
Oh, yes.
There's genuinely in 2018.
I'm the president of the Flat Earth Society.
A group of people trying to make that happen.
I always like the idea of being an astronaut and knowing that the guy who's trying to send me to Mars for 30 months, also kind of a lush. It's a good feeling.
We actually talked about that. We were trying to figure out if they allow them to drink in space, and the answer is no.
No.
And I don't understand. I mean, I understand if, while you're doing tests and doing work, but if you're going to be literally in isolation, the way that they test on Earth before they send them up is they literally isolate them like in northern Russia. Like in complete isolation to simulate space. And how do you not at least give him a bottle of vodka or something?
Someone who's really lonely
and
sad and you know, just feeling separated from everybody. Just get him drunk. That'll help.
I want to meet this guy because I want to volunteer to be part of a space mission where we test the effects of alcohol on the body in space. That and weed. I think that would be – I want to volunteer.
I actually asked him about sex. Like, how do you guys expect – they account for all parts of human healthy behavior in space except for this very important part that is – you know, I was like, do you guys actually cover stress relief? And he was like, no, it's not part of our program.
So you're telling me astronauts don't masturbate?
Is that allowed to be said on the internet?
Oh, yeah, it is. Trust me, we say it all the time.
We're professionals.
Yeah, we know what we're doing here.
I just don't know how they make that work as far as healthy, you know, there's two ways to relieve stress. Three ways. You can work out. You can drink. You can what was the other one? Masturbate.
Yeah.
So I just wasn't sure what the rules of that were for how NASA's not accounting for that.
Man, I didn't know that was a thing.
You know they have sex. Remember the one with the diaper who drove across the country to...
It wasn't in space, though.
Well, it doesn't matter. Yeah. They probably were doing it in space. Why do you think she's acting all crazy?
Oh, man. And that's something that he said that they deal with is just mentally. It pushes you to your limits, not becoming a crazy person in a diaper driving to Florida to kill her husband or whatever it was. Whitmire's one of my favorites, and then I wanted to talk about this. So there's a local bourbon bar here in Houston that everyone who knows, this is probably the best bourbon bar in Houston. There's a lot of great whiskey bars here. A Poison Girl. It's a complete dive, but it is one of the only places to find even single barrel Willet picks that are no longer around, like really, really rare stuff. And they did the first ever Jack Daniel's single barrel proof. And that came out last week. And if you're a Jack Daniels fan, this is definitely my favorite product of theirs. We actually bought a barrel too, but it'll be here this weekend. I guess this comes out next week. So.
Go light on me. I'm just realizing we're basically drinking all of it.
Drink slower. Yeah. Drink slower. Because you just have to talk for an hour. Yeah, you don't have to drink all of them. Yeah. So
six bottles. In 1 hour, that's one every 10 minutes.
We don't normally drink six bottles. We normally get through half of them.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good deal.
Yeah. But really, they're just...
That's a challenge. I mean, I'll accept it, but...
And then a beer to keep you hydrated.
Right.
While you're drinking the whiskey.
So, it's basically it. Just drinking and talking. We normally get through... I don't think last week we got through maybe... Or 2 weeks ago we got through Ingenious. We got through like three beers and a whiskey. So it's...
Okay.
It's not too bad. It's not too bad. Just don't shoot it.
Okay.
Although, you guys would be my first super drunk guest if we got there, so.
Fred could do that.
Yeah, I'm a professional.
Oh, yeah.
You said you were a bit of a rye guy, too, right?
I am, yeah.
You're also a retired, undefeated cage fighter.
Yeah.
So, when did that happen? When were you doing that?
I've been fighting since probably my first fight was like 2013.
Was it in Legacy?
2012. My first one was not. My last one was.
Do you remember who you fought?
A guy named Thomas Moreno.
So I know a couple. There's a guy, Justin Murray, a guy I work with, mm-hmm. fought in Legacy. Jeremy Morris is another one.
I also owned a website that was... It basically covered Houston MMA.
Oh, really?
It's called thecagedoor.net. It's since defunct. Barry Laminack, who hosts another show on our station, he and I ran the site. And basically, we went to every fight that happened in Houston for about 3 or 4 years. We were cage side.
You were – so – and I'm making a huge jump here. You guys actually – I'm sure you met Sage Northcutt early on.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Man.
Sage Northcutt and I actually have a common opponent. Like we both beat up the same guy. So when he was, I fought him as when I was an amateur, and then Sage, I think it was Sage's first pro MMA fight was against the same guy that I fought.
Did you guys keep stats of?
Yep. Kept everybody, like we did rankings, which of course pissed off everybody.
Of
who
course.
Fought in Houston.
But you guys are actually known to piss off a few people.
Yeah, I don't care. That's one of the things that I've never really worried about. Is like, oh, I pissed somebody off. Wah. That's not a thought that goes through my head normally. Of oh, I shouldn't say this. Better not upset this guy, but that's...
I shouldn't upset Jimmy Five, who lives in his basement on Twitter. So you said you were a rye guy. Actually,
I am a rye guy.
I think this is hands down one of the best ryes, best bang for your buck ryes out there. It's a little hard to find right now because they've kind of reeled back on doing their rye program. Wild Turkey, Russell's Reserve. Rye. Single barrel, $60, hands down one of the best, and they're not a sponsor of the show. This is just me showing love for something that's good.
It's really good.
So if you're a rye guy, I need to pour me a little bit of that.
Yeah, I don't understand why rye is I guess it's less popular than bourbon or scotch, but
We go through phases. I mean, you remember the vodka phase, early 2000s, late 2000s, and then we went to flavored vodkas, right? Everything's peat. I saw a donut flavored vodka the other day.
I would drink that.
I wouldn't. Again,
you
twice.
Don't like donuts?
No, I just don't like the way I felt the next day.
Oh, okay.
So the yeah, so we go through phases. Pre-prohibition, ryes were way more popular than bourbon. In fact, if you can find some old prohibition, pre-prohibition, right after prohibition, ryes, some of the best whiskeys on the market. And it's actually a very wide category. Whereas bourbon, you have all your typical brown sugar notes, like it's your typically right. It's your bourbon flavor. Rye can you can add sherry to rye. There's something called Alberta Dark Rye Batch, which is like a $26 rye that B makes. That's phenomenal, but it tastes completely different from this. Or Whistle Pig. I don't know if you ever had Whistle Pig, but
very good.
100% Alberta rye, depending on the – I know the Boss Hog, they sometimes source stuff from out of state. But essentially, the category for rye is broad, and it's making a resurgence. Once they open this category back up for single barrel releases, our group's going to be doing a couple right off the bat.
Nice.
So it's – ryes are definitely making a comeback. In fact, Kentucky Owl Rye was a release last year that was pretty hotly debated.
Jack Daniels has a rye now. I saw.
Yep, Jack Daniels has a rye, and I believe they have a cask-strength rye as well, too. So it's a category that a lot of people love.
It's interesting because every time I go to Canada, rye is the main thing there. Like, bourbon's kind of secondary. And the first few times I went up there, they didn't even have bourbon in a lot of the bars. It was just all rye.
Well, rye in general is produced a lot more in Canada, and I could be wrong, and I'm sure some person way smarter than me is going to correct me, but rye is a really cold resistant grain and easier to grow than your corn and your other product up there.
I'm a farmer, and that's true. That's true. Yeah.
So
I live on a rye farm.
It's a really popular thing up there. Crown Royal.
Canadian Club's real popular.
Canadian Club. I don't think that's rye. I think that's a blended whiskey, but I don't
know. Well, no, they've got what is it? The one that we drink up there all the time that's a rye. It's not Canadian Club.
Classic bottle?
I can't remember what it is.
Caribou's pretty good.
But it's like Caribou Crossing. It's twice as strong as if you buy it down here. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I've vomited many times over that stuff. Can't remember the name of it now.
When I met Fred, he was a plastic liquor bottle guy.
Now
he's a fancy.
I was a poor. I mean,
he's a fancy. But
I was all about Evan Williams and whatever I could afford, man. I was like, if it was $12 a bottle, that was awesome.
It's a win, yeah. The guy I mentioned earlier, my brother Sean, he makes good money, but he's one of those people that has never graduated in his preference of liquor or beer. He's still drinking that 32 case of Michelob Ultra or Busch Light, and I'm like, you can afford really good beer. Yeah. And he's
but
like, this
is what he's used to.
Well, and we went over there for Easter, and he gave me, I think it was a Michelob Ultra, and it was ice cold, and it was hot on Easter Sunday, and it just hit it right. And I thought, I haven't had this in 6 years, but I was secretly getting a lot of pleasure out of it, but felt guilty for admitting that I was drinking basically horse piss.
Like Michelob Ultra or Coors Light or any of these guys, your sponsors. The way I look at it is like, I don't eat at Applebee's anymore. Like, there's a point in my life where I was like, I'm just not going to eat at Applebee's. I'm not going to eat at Golden Corral.
Chili's. Yeah.
Chili's. Like, it's just not good. So I can either put my money into something that's good, and sure, it'll be more expensive. I'll have to give more money.
Yeah.
I honestly would rather not drink than to drink something that I don't like.
Just filler.
Yeah. I'd rather, if I'm, even if I'm at a party and there's just a Yeti full of Bud Light, I would rather just drink water or Gatorade and be that guy than to drink something that I just don't like.
I've got a guilty pleasure for Budweiser Red Label at the baseball park. It's mostly Bud Light, but if you're at a baseball game and it's hot and you're tired of drinking whiskey 24/7
at
like
the baseball
I
games now, though, you can get, I mean, granted, it's like I literally paid $13 for or maybe it was $13.50 for a Hopadillo, a tall boy of Hopadillo at the ballpark the other day. But I mean, you can get
craft.
At
you said
ballpark.
You're a craft guy, and you drink Carbach.
Yeah, Listen, I'm not one of these snobs who like worries about where the money goes in the end.
Neither do I.
I just worry about if it tastes good.
I've defended them as well and said that it needs to be. I understand the apprehension, but calm down. Let's see how it plays out before you get pissed off.
Like Carbach's quality hasn't gone down.
Nope.
And in fact, some of the best beers that they've made have been since they were bought by AB InBev. I don't get worked up about it. But I want beer that's like, when I say craft beer, I just mean something that's not like mass produced and sent all over the country and like no one bothered to take any care with it. I mean, to me, whoever's making the dollar at the end of the day,
doesn't matter.
Who the last dollar goes to makes zero difference to me. And I don't care if Bud Light gets it. I don't care if North Korea gets it. If it's good beer, I'll drink it.
Yeah, you heard that today. AJ Hoffman supports North Korea.
Yeah.
But
that's why I was in the military for that reason, because I was a spy.
You wanted to get that much closer?
Yeah, I'm part of what's happening now is because of me. I gave a lot of intel.
I was just going to say, I think the people who got upset over that have no concept of business. You don't. You get in business to make money. I mean, that's what you do.
That's what business is.
And as long as Eric was there, the quality was never going to change. And I mean, to me, I think people are just being childish.
Yeah. You can never win. And that's the thing we've talked about. There are only two modes when it comes to hobby versus business. And it's either I don't have enough money, so I'm skimping by, or you have too much money and you're a sellout. There's no like, hey, you finally got the financial support you need to be awesome. You know, we're rooting for you.
Right.
It's literally one or the other. We either hate you or you're struggling.
Even some of these other companies, like Sam Adams has never sold out. But nobody considers them craft beer anymore because they're so successful. And their beer is everywhere that everybody's like, whatever. I
believe the Craft Beer Association, or I've read before, I think it was, if you produce 80,000 barrels or more a year, then you can't be called craft.
You're out of the game.
And I think that's complete bullshit, because it should be about you making the product as opposed to how much of it you're producing.
You have that much success that, like, you know.
So $79,999 is just fine.
Right.
It's so extra lame. Beer.
Listen,
you're still crafting. I support you. $80,000, you're the devil.
You're the devil. Well, yeah. When the buyout was happening for Carbach, and I've been friends with Eric Warner, the head brewer there, for kind of a while, like before they got bought out. And he was telling me about what was happening. And he was like, they told me, listen, we're not going to change your beer. We're not going to tell you to do anything that you don't want to do.
It's all back of the house.
They said, in fact, you're going to have access to more stuff, more hops, more things like that than you've had before. And his next question was, do I have to get rid of any of my people? The answer was no. So if someone comes to you and says, hey, you're going to keep doing everything the exact same way you've been doing it,
but we're going to give you $100 million.
We're going to give you a big pile of money, or you cannot take the big pile of money and keep doing things the exact same way. What are you going to do?
You're going to take the money.
You take the money. I mean, that's what you go into. That's what people go to work for, is to make money. I mean, that's at the end of the day. Like, everybody can say, oh, I do it for the love. I do it for the love of craft beer. I highly doubt it. You're doing it because it pays your bills.
Well, the two aren't mutually exclusive. You can do it for the love and still retire with a family. I don't know about you, man, but I would love – there's an old saying, live like no one else so that later you can live like no one else. Do what you have to do now. Kill yourself. I'm 30. I look 40. It's – exhaust yourself, but set yourself up to where you can take care of your kids, your wife, maybe go on vacation every once in a while.
That's what it's all about.
It's exactly what it's about, and I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that.
I'm with you.
Yeah, the only reason to work is so you can play. I mean, that's the bottom line. And I've told people, like, if the Houston Chronicle came along and wanted to buy SportsMap from us and offered us $10 million and said, we're going to put slideshows all over it and do what we do on cron.com, I said, give me the money.
Yeah.
And I mean, we didn't.
No, AJ.
You know, we're doing a really cool website, and it's all awesome. But hey, you come around with that kind of money.
If someone told me they were going to give me $600 and they were going to fire Fred and I was going to do the show the next day, I would say, okay, listen, $600.
If someone asked me for $50, I was going to say, no, AJ and Fred are sellouts.
Yeah, I'm a sellout. I'm absolutely a sellout.
Kind of want more of that Jack Daniels. Let me cover this other one real quick. So Reserve 101, I don't know, you guys big Balcones fans?
I haven't had a lot. I haven't had anything like that. I've just had their basic stuff, but I mean, it's fine.
So they did, I mean, they from what I understand, they got
provided this glass.
Yeah, they did. They're sponsors of this episode, guys.
Oh, awesome.
They got...
Oh, I mean, yeah, I'm a big Balcones fan.
They're the best. They're the best.
They're awesome.
No, they're the worst. They're forcing me.
Is this Balcones Pappy?
So they... they got into this, I think, to make this single malt. And Reserve 101, a local bar here in Houston, has been voted top 50 bars in the U.S. You know,
frequently go there.
Houston's
got pregnant there. The first time you got pregnant was there.
Second time, my bad.
Was this the first or second abortion?
The first one was aborted.
50th, actually. But
first one was aborted. This one was given up for adoption.
So they got into this to make the single malt, and Reserve got their first ever single barrel pick. So it's definitely a little different than bourbon. It's really interesting. I'm a big fan. Hmm. I think this may be the first episode that we actually get through all six on the table.
I'm up for a challenge, man.
We've only gone through two segments, too.
How many segments are there?
Four.
Four?
I say segments.
We have, what, 2 minutes, 50 seconds left in this segment?
Correct, yeah, oh, yeah. Little cool. Look at you breaking the fourth wall there. Deadpool style.
I see you guys. I see all of you.
Especially you on the left.
True story, I didn't know that this was going to be on video until I got here today.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look fine.
I'm not going to lie, I was a little salty about it because I hate coming in and like looking like a scrub. And
you're not even the third worst person dressed on the show so far.
So
I'm first and second.
It happened the other day. I came in to do the morning show. And, you know, it's the morning show. I don't ever do mornings. I very rarely wake up before 8 a.m.
Man.
Much less
you
show up.
You mentioned business is business, but it sounds like you guys have a lot of fun, too.
Well, Yeah. I mean, listen, we've got a job that is fun. I mean, but we're not breaking rocks around here. But I typically don't wake up very early, and I stay up late. I wake up early, or I wake up late.
Wake up late, yeah.
But I came in the other day to do the morning show because Lance Zierlein was doing NFL draft stuff, and John Granato asked me to do it. And just like you suckered me into doing this,
yeah.
John suckered me into doing that
show.
Yeah. And
hey, come on my show. I'll give you free booze and let you pontificate for
right.
an hour.
So,
I guess.
But
I'll
I did
do
have
it.
To sit in traffic for an hour to give you.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't. I hate
did you
driving
prod
in
for this?
Time.
I appreciate it.
No, he didn't. He didn't. But he did make me feel really guilty because once he agreed to do it, like,
you
I
had to.
I ignored your first email.
I know you did. You yeah. you ignored my first three emails.
This is what I do. I, like, if someone asks me to do something, anything, I just ignore it. I don't want to do anything. I don't like to help people. I don't want to do anything. I just want to be left alone. So
It says the guy who was out rescuing people after Harvey. He acts like he doesn't want to help people.
Okay, that's different than doing.
You do,
work.
He does
he
a lot more.
He's trying to get to the Pizza Hut around the corner and
right.
stopped and helped someone.
He does
along
a lot
the way.
More than he lets on.
But the reality was, I got the email. I said, oh, I don't want to come in early and do work. Like you're interfering with my gym time. It's
the crack of 10 a.m.
it disrupts my normal day.
Right.
And then I see I don't know if it was your second or your third email because Andrew sent an email saying.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Hey, follow up. I ignored that email.
I didn't know Andrew did that.
Yeah. I ignored all the emails until you sent one that said, well, Tuesday works for Fred. Can you do Tuesday? And I think I might have even ignored it the first time you said that. And then you're like, really need to know if you guys are doing Tuesday so I can start promoting it. And I was like, that means Fred said yes. Like, everyone here already thinks I'm like this big jerk, which I kind of am. But I at the same time, I like
some of the comments I got on my Facebook page about you guys being on today starting to make sense now. I'm starting to understand.
Yeah.
I put on Facebook. I asked any of you guys listen to Fred and AJ. And we got some lot, you know, only show worth listening to in the city every day. I listen to them on the way home every day. I listen out of a hate a half for both of them.
Oh, nice. All right.
Best sports show in town.
Tell the guy I hope he dies in a fire. I don't have Facebook now, but just let him know.
The Whiskey Cake state manager says they complain about everything, but good gambling tips.
I do complain about everything, and I understand that. And I understand that people don't like that, but it's just it's who I am. I showed up at that show with John Granato. There's a damn TV camera in there. Like not
Nate Griffin,
you know,
yeah.
Not like you know, it'll be broadcast on Sportsman. I don't really care about that much. This is gonna be on like real TV,
right.
Where people are like live, where people are watching, and they've got a guy Nate Griffin's in there in a suit, and I'm in there in like you know, jeans and a t-shirt and a backwards ball cap.
Looking like a broke man's Grego.
Yeah, it's like, dude, you could have told me. And you're like, oh, well, we didn't know the Rockets closed it out last night. When something big happens, Nate's in here. And I was like, you could have told me. You guys could have told me this was going to be on TV.
I just assumed, since we work in the same office, that you guys religiously followed.
Honestly, I had no idea you even worked here. I'll be honest. I until the emails started coming that I ignored.
My favorite part of my day right now.
All the emails.
Being told how worthless I am. Yeah, by AJ Hoffman.
Listen, I don't mean it like that. But all the emails that you sent saying, "Oh, I do this show," I had no idea the show even existed. I had no idea. I live in a bubble. I swear to God, I'm protected from things. I don't want to know about things.
There have been people who have wondered the level of ego it takes to start your own show, and I can assure them that ego has been thoroughly checked on today's episode of Whiskey Neat. There's this thing that they do at Balcones called their staff selection, and that's what this is. This is one of their staff selections. So one more pour of this, and then I think...
Except it says to Chris, enjoy with friends. I don't know that...
Yeah, so AJ's not allowed to have
any. Yeah, I don't get any of this.
AJ's not allowed to have any at all.
I got to finish off this first.
Yep, no worries. Take your time, man.
Getting back to something you said a little earlier about the show being... about work and things like that. I want to make something real clear. What we do is not work. I mean, we have the greatest opportunity in the world. We get paid to go and talk about whatever the hell we want for 3 hours a day. We get paid to go to the racetrack. We get paid to go to poker clubs. We get paid to go to Vegas. We get paid to go to bars. That's not work. The other stuff I do is work. But
for me, it's work because I don't do any of the other stuff that Fred does. So that's just
it's
work for me.
I mean, we treat it as a job, but it's not. I mean, I've told them this. I'd do the show for free. Now they'd have to pay me a hell of a lot more to do Sports Map than they're paying me if they wanted me to do the show for free.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fun and the opportunity to get out and meet people and do things and do stuff like this. I love it. And I love it a lot more than he does. I really enjoy the fact that people want to talk to us.
You're a socializer.
I am.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah, I'm a lot more.
Yeah, like when we and you know what? I'm glad that he is, because when we go places and you know people want to talk to us, like it's the worst for me. It really is, and it's a nightmare for like to talk to strangers is awful for me. And I love our listeners. I appreciate them. I don't like talking to people I don't know.
Right, yeah.
But Fred is a master of – he talks to everybody.
Right.
And, well, I spent most of my life being a complete loser that nobody wanted to talk to, so now that they do, right, I kind of enjoy it. Right.
So there's a big comedian I'm a big fan of, Tom Segura.
Dane Cook?
No.
Oh.
Although you kind of look a little Dane Cook-y. Tom Segura's the same way. He loves doing comedy, and he's really great at it, but he – after the show, he doesn't like to stay and drink with strangers. He likes to go straight back to the hotel.
Yeah.
And I totally get it. I'm more of a, like you, I enjoy this. I enjoy, even with strangers, I enjoy, that's how I meet people is getting together over, we do bottle shares like you do the beer thing. There's a cigar lounge in Clear Lake that it's called Maduro's now, but we'll get together 20 people a lot of them never met each other. And we'll have everyone brings 3 to 6 bottles. And all of a sudden you've got 50 bottles on the table, 20 people. And within a few drinks, everyone's best friends. Surprisingly, we've never had an issue there.
Yeah, it's
funny.
We had
a gun go off once, but that was something else.
Usually, and when I do bottle shares, usually the first time I show up at a bottle share, like there's got to be at least somebody I know there.
Right.
You know,
one person that you can kind of.
One guy that I know, preferably more than one. But there's always like an anxiety.
Sure.
Like, oh, God, I'm going to have to talk to these people. And the worst thing for me, and I don't know. You know, what's your day job? What do you do?
Like, I work for an aviation firm. We handle the logistics for basically anyone rich enough to have their own aircraft.
Okay.
Harrison Ford.
So let's say
– Oprah.
Okay. You actually work with their aircrafts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we like
I don't know
one?
If I'm allowed to say that. Uh-huh. Honestly, I
– Okay. Well, let's say someone – like is it fun for you when strangers come up to you and they're like, oh – talk about Harrison Ford's plane.
So that's – I get what you're asking. More so what happens, I go to dinners a lot with these clients who I've never met.
Okay.
And the best thing I've learned to do is, you know, there's an old saying, know everything there is to know about something and knows something about everything, and you can have a conversation with anybody. So I'm an expert on whiskey, but I know more than the average Joe on whiskey. But I also can talk a little sports. I could talk a little poker. I could talk, you know what I mean? I used to play poker religiously, and I just got out of it because I wasn't good at it, apparently.
Well, you folded to
I folded preflop too much. Yeah.
That's why you got out. That's good.
So
move.
There's a guy locally who's
I want to play with you.
There's a guy locally who's very big into whiskey, but old whiskeys that have been sitting in the bottle for 70 years. Michael Canfield, who I played poker with him the other night, and he's like, why are you folding? It's just, like he's a big numbers guy. He works in energy trading. And he was like, why? I don't know. He couldn't fathom the stupidity of folding a free card.
How do I get in this game of yours? Just
I told you, I stopped playing. I switched to drinking full time, and it's worked out for me. Although you've been to Mint Poker?
I have. I mean, we do a lot of business with Prime Social now. So
what's Prime Social? That's the one downtown.
Yeah, it's right.
No, it's on Westheimer.
Westheimer, yeah. And we've got a couple other clubs that we're going to be doing business with, which I'm excited about. It's very cool that they found this loophole that we can play legal poker because, frankly, I used to play in the underground rooms a lot. And in fact, after the divorce, before I got into radio, that's how I was making a living.
I got tired
after
of
the divorce or after a divorce?
After divorce number two.
After a divorce.
A divorce, yeah.
Okay.
Well, the last one was the worst one because that's the one that that basically cost me everything I had and then some because I had built a nice little
nest egg.
Yeah, and actually that's why I'm in radio is I was when I took my buyout from the Chronicle, I was just going to play poker for a year and, you know, probably just become full-time professional as opposed to part-time. And my ex-wife was a lawyer who drew up the agreement, which I trusted her on, and that was pretty dumb.
Yep, yeah, screwed.
Yep. And so suddenly not only did I go from having several hundred thousand dollars to living in the backseat of my freaking car.
Yeah.
And that happened pretty fast. So,
well, I'll tell you, at least for me, it is my new goal in life to play you in a game. And the moment I beat you in a hand, I'm going to be bringing it on the show to
talk about.
You have
cards?
Yeah, I'll play right now. I'll play heads up right now.
No, I don't.
Heads up championship of the world.
However much you want to play for.
I don't have any cards on me.
You didn't bring cards.
I don't have any cards on me, but there's a...
It'd make good television, I'm telling you.
It would be.
Because I'd show everybody my cards, you know?
The whole time and still beat me the whole time?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. You didn't win the World Series, so...
No, I didn't. But it's funny because... And listen, AJ is, I think, every bit as good a player as I am. And that's one of the fun things we do when we go to Vegas is that we'll go play tournaments and one of us usually cashes. And we have a couple friends that come out there with us sometimes. So we all just kind of take a piece of each other's action. And, I can't remember the last time where we didn't win some money on a trip between us.
Always happens. Like the last time I went out there, I think we played in like six tournaments. And
you were on fire.
I literally won four of them.
And the best. That's awesome. And I wound up, there was one tournament. It was awesome. He was at I had busted out about two spots from the money, and he's at the final table. And so I decided to go sit at this cash game and wait for him to finish. And I wound up playing two hands and freaking get all in on the second hand and wound up making like $700 on one hand.
Right.
And he won like $480 for the tournament.
Yeah.
And I'm like, play for 15 minutes. And he comes over and goes, I chopped. I got this. I go, and I just picked up my stakes. Yeah. All right, let's go. And they got pissed.
Here's your 20% of my tournament winnings. And he's like, yeah, I just won $700 playing cash. It's
like, made more than you in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And they got so pissed off because I just got up. I'm like, well, that's life, brother. You know, and I told you I was just here until he was finished with the tournament.
Just waiting for him to get by.
Yeah, and it was funny because it was just one of those hands that however it was going to play out, whoever had my hand was going to win because both of us were going to get all in. It was just one of those situations, but that was fun. We usually and if we do really well, we go and go to the whiskey bar and shots of Pappy.
Living it
that's
up.
That's right.
Yeah.
We haven't done that in a while. We need to do that next time we're there.
Overpriced Pappy. That's the move.
Yeah, it's like $120 a shot, I think. Yeah.
There are better whiskeys out there than Pappy, but for some reason, when you first get into bourbon, it's the first thing everyone hears about is Pappy being the gold mine. And I can think of 10 whiskeys I'd rather have more.
Well, but it's kind of like, especially like we're in Vegas, if we win big, it's kind of like it's sort of the celebration.
Tradition.
It's a cherry on top.
You know what? And I absolutely.
It's because we can.
I mentioned our marriage bottle is a bottle of Balvenie 15. It's a $100 bottle. It's nothing special, but It's something that it's a celebratory. I totally get it. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with Pappy. In fact,
which, by the way, yeah. Like, yeah, there's better whiskeys than Pappy. Pappy's still pretty damn good.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
pretty great.
It ain't bad.
Yeah.
It ain't bad.
I think Old Rip 10 is meh, but the Pappy 15.
You get the 15, it's good.
Yeah. I would agree.
And 23 is maybe the most overpriced because 23 is past. Yeah.
It's insane. It's insane. But I'm a big fan of it, though. So this is, I don't know, we may have started with this, but I don't remember us talking about it. So
we didn't start with
that. No, we did not.
That's the last of the six.
We started with
the
winners.
It's the last of the six. We got, we're not even, we still got another
segment.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, boy. So this is Old Forester Prohibition 1920. You guys have a show today, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, I'm supposed to go to the gym after this.
Yeah, that's what I was going to do, too. That was my plan.
I hope your hand-eye coordination is...
Well, no, the best part is like the gym I go to, it's like there's a bunch of like really old people. I can almost guarantee you I'm going to be hitting on a bunch of fossils.
Yeah.
I'm going to be hip-breaking this afternoon. So,
the sad thing is Fred goes to a gym that there's a lot of gay activity at. So he's talking about a dude.
No, he's going to break a dude's hip. I'm not going to that version of the gym. I'm going to one down the road that has all the really olds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All the really olds. That's one way to put it.
Like Fred's not a really old.
I'm not a really old. I'm just old.
Just old-ish. Yeah.
Oldish.
So I'm going to come back to this for a second. So Old Forester 1920 came out in 2016, and it was hands down. So you mentioned Pappy earlier. Pappy, Old Forester Birthday Bourbon, all these things are like, they only come out once a year and they're gone immediately. And you really have to know the right people to get them. This is hands down my favorite, one of my favorite bottles on the table. Came out in 2016 and is just the most phenomenal regularly available product. That's produced. I think Old Forester 1920s, just out of this world, fantastic. And you liked it?
Yeah, that was really, really good.
Do you? What do you? You want something else? A little more of this?
Yeah, a little more of that'd be great. So,
let's see here. Tell me when I can't see.
That's good.
I can't see the cup.
You go outside.
Do I go outside?
Yeah.
Yeah. You mean just because how white I am?
You're super white. Like, I'm pretty white. I mean, my goodness. Like you're a
very white gentleman. Yeah.
Very, very white. I mean, like that that picture of you is like it's actually accurate. Like that's how white you are.
So one of these days, when I get you back on and we're comfortable enough for me to, when we're comfortable enough,
I'm absolutely ignoring your emails all the way through next time. Hard ignore.
When we're comfortable enough for me to return fire,
okay,
I'm going to destroy you.
Okay,
you know.
There's about 20 things I wanted to say. I was like, no, he's a guest. Leave him alone.
Zero chance you'll destroy me.
Yeah, he can handle himself. Go right ahead.
Zero chance.
I'll officiate. Like, I'm fine with this.
You'll throw some bombs, I'm sure.
But I'm
really good at this.
I'll put 100 on AJ, though.
I would honestly,
guys really go after it, because, frankly, he just does it. You're talking about doing it. He's going to destroy you. Sorry.
Well, he's a guest, and I don't, and you guys are more established here. Don't do it. Yep. Okay. My producer here says don't do it.
Trust me. He beats my ass all the time.
The way that you guys interact, I'd imagine he definitely beats your ass.
This is my only job, is to make people feel small and petty. Like, that's it.
And uncomfortable.
That's all I do. Yeah.
I'm going to get an email from Todd, be like, we got to cancel your show. I'm sorry. AJ's pissed off.
You're out. AJ doesn't like you. You're out. You're done. I've got a lot of pull around here. The president told me that I've become very famous.
The president,
the
Trump?
The president of the United States. We have a drop on our show where he says, AJ, you've become very famous.
Is he really?
I got to tell you.
No, that's a joke, right?
That's not a joke.
No, it's a real drop.
Trump?
It's a real drop.
You got Trump to say something?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. He was talking about
AJ Hinch.
He was talking about AJ Hinch, but it doesn't matter. Yeah. He was basically talking about me.
AJ's more famous than AJ Hinch anyway.
Probably.
I had all these things
I
wanted to talk about.
He manages a baseball team. That's so easy.
Like what?
Well, we'll
blast right through him. Pick one.
Check my emotions here. Because
we can blast things in a hurry.
Well, I just didn't know you were an Army vet.
I am.
I didn't know that. And
Fred's
poker,
not.
Just gambling.
Oh, okay.
Well, we're both into gambling now. I mean, I'm not the only poker guy here, and actually, the best poker player I've ever been around was a really good friend of AJ's who I started the show with, Matt Dean. Matt Dean, I learned so much from that guy, seventh in the World Series, but I thought I was a good poker player until I started hanging around with Matt, and being around him took me to a different level. And the cool thing is working with AJ is that we talk a lot of strategy and stuff off air about poker and sports and everything else. And I learned a lot from him, and I think he learns a lot from me. And I've become a much better gambler because of people like Matt and AJ. And then I got to give my wife credit because she started looking at it from an accountant's perspective. And, you know, she keeps track of everything I do and says, here's your winning wins, here's your losses, here's what your return on investment is. And she's been telling me for years, play more cash poker and less tournaments. Because
she was strategizing with you.
Yeah, because and she's a pretty good poker player herself. She just doesn't like doing it anymore. But she, here's your ROI in cash, here's your ROI in tournaments. And using stuff like that.
He's different than me. I don't ever tell my wife that I gamble.
Yeah, it's, you know, that old meme about the one thing I regret in life is if I died, my wife finding out exactly what I paid for my guns or whatever.
Yeah.
Most guys who play poker would rather
beer and gambling and
not tell the wife how much
but,
you spent.
But the difference is, and I spent 15 years in a marriage where I wouldn't tell the wife anything, but this one, you know, she gets it. She gets it. I gamble. She gets it. I'm going to spend money on beer. She gets it. I'm going to go buy a bunch of whiskey, and she's cool with it, you know, and it helps it. She's a pretty good earner herself. So, you know,
the thing I learned with my wife was to simply write it out. It was an adjustment to start collecting whiskey or beer at the house. And I remember the first time I got around 30 bottles, she was like, my family's going to think you're an alcoholic. And now you sit on a couple hundred and don't think twice about it. I think it's an adjustment of something you're not used to.
When my mother-in-law comes into town, my wife is she grew up in a very conservative household, and I have an industrial restaurant style fridge, like a double door stainless steel
in the garage
fridge in the garage, yeah. Full of beer. My spare room closet have shelves in it so it could hold beer, so you can't hang clothes in there anymore, but it holds a lot of beer. And when my mother-in-law comes to visit, that's where she stays. And that was a concern early on, but eventually it's like
you just write it out.
You write it out.
Yeah, man. Yeah. They'll eventually get over it. They'll
eventually realize you're not an alcoholic. He's not the worst.
What else is on your list?
Well, no, I just bang through it. It's not a lot.
We can cover a lot of stuff in a hurry.
I just hit. Did you hear that? That tap I just hit? Yeah. So no. I wanted to talk about, you know, you mentioned
Fred has genital warts.
No, I got those cleared up. That was a year ago.
Okay. That old news. He's got old stuff.
Yeah. Well, Bob Dylan was coming out with a new whiskey. I wanted to get your take on celebrity whiskey. Yeah.
I love Bob Dylan. I don't know about his whiskey, but I love Bob Dylan.
Yeah. Is he too close to the mic?
No. I think
he was slipping into primal mode and I just kind of.
No, I was over here. I'm good.
I think celebrity whiskey is dumb. I think radio host whiskey is a great idea.
Are you trying to say something on this today's episode of
you know, stay tuned. Whiskey. Keep listening to The Blitz. You might hear some news here in a couple weeks.
Some local radio whiskey? Is that what you're saying?
Just saying. Now, I'm honestly, you know, and I don't want to give away too much here. I just think it's if I trust the person, like I trust me.
You trust Bob Dylan?
I don't know about him.
I trust Bob Dylan more than you.
I trust Bob Dylan when it comes to singing. Well, not singing, no. Songwriting.
I trust Bob Dylan as a person. I don't trust in situations like this, it looks like
I'll just say this.
His people.
I trust me with whiskey more than I trust Bob Dylan. Now, I trust Bob Dylan more as
Dylan's
a songwriter.
Really rock. He's like a rock star.
He's a songwriter. He's a horrible singer, but he's a great songwriter.
Are you saying Bob Dylan's not a rock star?
He's a rock star, yeah. Well, he's not a rock star. He's a folk star.
Yeah. But he's kind of a rock star.
Listen, I love Bob Dylan. Don't get me into dogging Bob Dylan.
Don't besmirch him.
I'm not besmirching him. I just don't know if I trust him on whiskey. Now, I'll say this. Will Wheaton's beer was really good.
He's like a Rolling Stone.
So I think beer's a little different because even the celebrity beers are going to be the higher alcohol, the more, you know, you can do a lot with it. Did you really?
I did.
With who? Through who?
Oh, with Carbon.
What was it called?
It was their KR&D. It was a KR&D series, like their research and development series. We did a chocolate mint stout.
I did not know that.
Yeah, well, really, and we'll do another one too.
Bombers to do another one. in the
no,
glass.
No, they were only. It was only. No, draft no, it was.
They were, but they were in some of it. It was at Biggio's. We had one. We were doing the show.
Yeah,
at Biggio's,
but it was on draft.
It was on tap.
Yeah, it was like there was. Yeah. I don't know. It was like maybe 200 kegs in the city.
And it was all over.
Yeah, it was everywhere. Yeah.
That's awesome. How many years ago was that?
It was last year.
Last year?
Yeah. It was 20.
Yeah, because we were Biggio's last year and they had on tap. Yeah.
And then we're going to do another one here in a couple months.
Right, what else you got? What else on your list?
Well, no, I was surprised. So, who said we're done with the Bob Dylan thing? I have many things I want to say about it.
You got a list there.
We got 6 minutes.
I know.
And
I want you to get
left.
Through the list. Listen, we can do this. We can get through 20 topics in
this
6 minutes.
This is by far the most emasculating episode of Whiskey Need Today. I've learned that, at least in my experience, the trick is to stop giving a shit. I'm sorry. Let me try that for radio.
That's okay. Stop caring. That's okay. I already said it. You can bleep that one too.
No, honestly. Stop making a big deal about everything. Just go with the flow.
Just don't care. And yes, if you wind up.
Just be happy.
That's the key to marriage. Don't care.
Exactly. No. The key to marriage is to just be happy in what you have and not be so particular. Stop splitting hairs. Stop nitpicking. Just be happy in who you are.
The thing is, you're never going to change another person.
Correct.
You're never going to control what they do. So if you get ticked off about it, it's kind of on you, right? So just let them be them. You be you. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, fine.
There's that stupid old thing that the only person that can make you mad or choose to be mad is yourself.
Oh, yeah.
So just stop.
And some of the worst and most wasted emotions in the world are jealousy and anger. I mean, they're pointless. They really are. I mean, there's no reason for them.
Everyone I've ever known that has had every couple I've known, I know this one couple that I've known for literally the entire time I know my wife. They've been married 10 years. Anytime they fight, it's always one of them that just is, it's the nitpicking. Just if both parties can just relax and love each other, then you're good.
See, we've kind of gotten to a point where if one of us is ticked at the other, like, I'll just go downstairs and watch TV and take a bottle of vodka with me or a bottle of whiskey and just, that's it. We don't talk for the rest of the day. And it's fine. Or if she's mad at me, she does the same thing.
Let it go, yeah.
Yeah, and that's it. Next day, and we have a 9 a.m. rule. 9 a.m. the next morning, if we're mad about something, it's erased.
Same thing for me. Like, if my wife pisses me off, I lock her in a crate.
It rubs a lotion on its skin.
At 9 a.m., I let her out of the crate. If she can figure out how to behave for the rest of the day, then it's good.
Then
if
we're
not,
good. Then we can move on.
Next night in the crate.
Yeah. That's right.
There's this one.
Hashtag her too.
The most controversial episode so far. There's this one.
That was a made up story, by the way. My wife doesn't even have a crate. It's like a full room.
No, I've seen it. It's like a cage. Yeah.
It's
a cage. Be honest. Right. It's. I mean, she can stand up in it, but she has to slump a little.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I was saying.
That's all right. She gets for being that
guys,
tall.
Guys, thanks so much. I appreciate it. This is a lot of fun.
Sure.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much. I got to get you guys back on.
Who's going to see this episode? What's your viewership?
6,000.
6,000 people?
Give or take.
What's up, guys?